believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight comes to us from Ann Arbor and has authored 5 best-selling books on business and sports. He spent 400-plus hours with the legendary Bo Schembechler in the last year and a half of Bo's life, co-authoring a book entitled Bo's Lasting Lessons. We'll talk to him about what he learned from Bo and what made Bo so very special. His name? John Bacon. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with the world-famous author, John Bacon. John, welcome. It's an honor to come in.
Jack, thank you.
You are a world-class author.
We can debate that one. I like your ambition, though, and I appreciate the praise.
You've authored 5 best-selling books on business and sports. Talk about how did you ever get to this point in your life?
Strangely, I'd have to say, when people ask me, young college students especially, how can I do what you do? My first question is, what do I do exactly? I write books. I write articles for magazines. I do some radio. Do a lot of public speaking, as well as teach at the University of Michigan. So it's a bit circuitous. It's hardly a job description. And how I got there is equally strange. I started out by going to law school at Michigan for one day, for which you receive very little credit, it turns out. But I had sold my first story that morning to a magazine, Motor Trend Magazine, and the article was titled Confessions of an Automotive Idiot, which does not make it a very technical piece, to say the least, but sold it that Wednesday morning, go to my first class that afternoon. And during that first class, the dean says, the old saw, of course, look to your left, look to your right. At the end of the semester, one of you will be gone, in the classic Hausman accent. So I'm thinking to myself, I've always wanted to be a writer. I've never wanted to be a lawyer. What am I doing here? And with the confidence of an article sold 2 hours earlier, I figured, okay, what the heck? I looked to my left, I looked to my right, and I said, boys, good news, I'm it. So I patted them on the shoulder, I grabbed my books, I walked out, and the whole class kind of laughed, but I never turned around. And 2 days later, I was covering a high school football game in Whitmore Lake for the Ann Arbor News for $50, getting rained on. And I thought my career would never be worse than it is right now, and I already love it. So I must have made the right call. And I got a column with the Ann Arbor News 2 years later, got picked up by the Detroit News in 95 through 99, writing sports features for the Detroit News, then travel features as well around the state of Michigan. Left in 99 to freelance for Time and ESPN, New York Times, and others, and start writing books. The first book is on called Blue Ice, the History of Michigan Hockey. The second book is America's Corner Store and the History of Walgreens. The third book is Cirque du Soleil, The Spark, and the fourth book is The Bo Book, Bo's Lasting Lessons. There's also one book I wrote a part of with Angelique Shingalis and Chris McCoskey. That's the first book in 96, Legacy of Champions. So I guess it's more like 4.2 books. And the last book has hit the Wall Street Journal and New York Times business bestseller list. We just heard that yesterday. So that was a lucky break. Not quite Mitch Albom's category, but going in the right direction.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Bo was notorious for his dislike of sports writers.
Well earned, let me tell you.
In 1996, Bo gave you 16 boxes of his personal papers. Mm-hmm. Why did he do that, and what did you do with them, John?
The why is the hardest question to answer. I'm often asked this. Even when Bo was alive, I did not have the temerity to ask him for fear of the whole thing. He might reconsider it and realize it's not a very good idea. But for a couple reasons. One, his great line to me. We finished 2 stories together, one on Fielding Yost. That was the first one in 96, the summer. That was part of that book, Legacy of Champions, actually, and Bo brought him back to life. He was great at knowing his history. Not everyone does. I recall at the same time for the Detroit News later on, I was doing a story on Jackie Robinson, and Vince Coleman famously did not know who Jackie Robinson was and didn't seem to care. It's hard to fathom this, but Bo could quote Yost up one side and down the other, While doing that story, I realized he's not very retired for a retired guy. I said, hey, can I follow you around for a week? And incredibly, he said yes. So wherever he went, I went for a whole week, including his office, Grand Rapids, speeches all in the area. I had a blast with the guy. We did a two-page feature, which finished in the top 10 nationwide in the APSE contest, which is the main contest. And Bo called me into his office after the story came out, and he said, well, Bacon, you didn't screw it up. That from Bo was high praise. And at that point, he asked me, hey, do you want my papers? And I said, you know, are you serious? And I'm a history major, of course. I love this idea. And he says, yeah, it's cost me $100 right now to storm. I said, coach, I'll storm for half that. I did not say that. I got the U-Haul right away. We loaded them up, got them to my parents' basement, and started filing them into four-drawer filing cabinets, a huge haul, to say the least. Every game he coached is in there, in a brown accordion folder. 74 Indiana will be 1 inch thick. Michigan State in 78 will be 2 inches thick. Ohio State any year is 3 inches thick. That's how organized that guy was. Of all the praise he gets for the motivational stuff, the yelling and the screaming, you don't get there by yelling and screaming. And as I was going through these papers, I realized it's a lot more complicated than I thought. And I went back to Bo and said, okay, you've clearly given me a biography here, and I'll write that one day. In the meantime, a book I want to write with you is on leadership, because this stuff is transferable. It's timeless. Anybody can learn from the papers I'm going through right now. Anybody can learn from what you've done here at U of M. And he said, of course, as usual, Bacon, you have no idea what you're talking about. So he was a hard sell. In the meantime, I talked to David Brandon. You know him well. The CEO of Domino's Pizza, a third stringer for Bo in the mid-70s. Jimmy Hackett, great guy. CEO of Steelcase Furniture, another third stringer from the mid-70s. And at the same time, I took over my old high school hockey team in Ann Arbor, which was not a financially smart move, but a labor of love. A team that had not won a game in a year and a half. And I took them over in 2000. And 3 years later, we're the best team in school history. And I was the worst player, by the way, in school history, 3 years in the varsity team. And I still hold the record for fewest goals in a Heron uniform, zero. And that record, Jack, will never be broken. No matter what else happens, that record's mine. So I'm looking at this. Domino's Pizza, pizza delivery, office furniture, high school hockey. We're all third-string players. None of us were as good as we wanted to be. And here we are leading successful organizations. How are we doing this? We're stealing shamelessly from Bo Schembechler. All his principles, how to set goals, how to manage the doghouse, how to handle setbacks, how to handle success. Management stuff, not football stuff, management stuff. And so Hackett and Brandon start talking to me that summer. I interviewed them formally, and I kept on going back to Bo and said, look, Bo, look. And he kept on saying, you know, no, no, no. And I finally said, should I quit asking? He says, no, keep trying, which is a quizzical instruction. And then after Bo and I both gave eulogies for Don Canham at Chrysler Arena in 2005, he passed away in May of that year. He called me in 2 days later, and he said, Bacon, it's time. Because Canham passing away, as Bo said in his eulogy, he said, I'm not ready because I always thought I would go before Don. And I was always curious what he was going to say about me. So that was a wake-up call to Bo that if we're going to write this, now's the time. More money did not appeal to him. More fame was a detriment, not a plus. But the one argument that sold him was, Bo, when you're gone, what are your grandkids going to know about you? What are your players going to give to their kids to tell them who this coach was and what he stood for? And Mitch Almonbeau did a fantastic book, a huge bestseller, 100,000 copies plus, critically acclaimed, but it was a memoir. It was a beautiful memoir, but it's a memoir. It's not a leadership book as such. And so the difference was do a leadership book, and that's what Bo and I set out to do.
We're talking to John Bacon, and I'm Jack Grisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Crasula.
We're talking to John Bacon, and one of his many, many talents is he's a professor of journalism at the U of M. Highest rated professor when they ask the students.
So far, knock on wood, these things always change. One does not hang their hats on the opinions of 20-year-olds or else you're in big trouble. But it's been a lot of fun. You got it.
The book. The first two chapters, put your heart into it, passion, and then chapter number two, seek mentors, not money. Share those with us.
Very straightforward, and Bo's first lesson of leadership is you're going to have a very hard time leading effectively if you're not passionate about what you're doing. If you're not into it, and I know you're a leader of a big company, two big companies now, If you're not into it, don't expect your people to be into it. And the leadership itself will not work unless you're into it. Bo knew from seventh grade on he was going to be a football coach. He was the only guy in the seventh grade in his junior high school to walk across about a mile and a half, 2 miles, to his school, the high school, to play on the freshman team for 2 years before he even was a freshman. And he said, "I knew I was going to be a coach, and nothing was going to stop me." Bo was not in it to get rich, and he's not in it to get famous. Both those things really surprised Bo. But it does kind of show you, when you're passionate about what you're doing and you do it with all your heart, chances are the money does find you, and even the fame can find you as well. But that was Renata's goals, and he came by that honestly. As far as mentors go, that speaks for itself. That Bo says a lot of guys, a lot of his players, make mistakes of taking the biggest ticket out of college, the biggest name, working for ABC or Merrill Lynch or whatever it may be, and nothing wrong with those places. He said it's better to work for somebody you respect and can teach you. That's more important than anything, more important than money, more important than fame or anything else. He said it's better to get a cup of coffee for Woody Hayes 5 times a day for nothing, and he was paid nothing for Woody Hayes his first year out of college, than it is to be some hotshot with the New York Jets working for a knucklehead. And he played by that, obviously. And of course, as you know, you've read the book, his three great mentors were Woody Hayes at Ohio State, Air Parsegian at Northwestern before he's at Notre Dame, and Dwight Perry at Bowling Green. Now, all three of those are Hall of Fame coaches and very different personalities, to say the least. But Bo is smart enough to learn from all three guys. And in a nutshell, from Dwight Perry, he learned, if you're the head, he and Bill Gundlach, his old buddy, were coaching together for Dwight, and they were walking around campus, walking behind him, arguing about some defensive scheme or other, and kind of giving Dwight a hard time. And Dwight, at the top of the steps, the marble steps, going into the athletic department office, whips around. This guy is very sweet, not a yeller, not a screamer. Very nice guy, but not on this day. He turns around and says, "You know what? I know you guys are smarter than I'll ever be, but I've got some news for you. I am the head coach." And he says there's great power in that. He said, if you're a leader, don't apologize for being the leader. You have to be the leader. Whether you're right or wrong, you still have to be the leader. You can still correct yourselves, whatever else, but you are in charge. Don't forget that. It sounds simple, but we've all seen coaches, all seen leaders who've not done that. There has to be the man in charge, one chief and then other Indians. From Era, one of your all-time favorites, a gentle guy by all accounts, Bo said the smartest man he ever worked with in college football. The best season Bo said he ever coached was when they were 0-9 at Northwestern and they're all about to get fired. And the team did not give up. They kept on battling, losing games by 10 points, 12 points. And the AD, Stu Holcomb, his son, was the backup quarterback on that team. And of course, he's pressuring Era to play his son. Now they're 0-5 and 0-6 and 0-7. And Era said to his coaches, "What do you think?" And the coaches said, Bo included, he said, "Quarterback's not the problem here." And Era said, "You're right." And he walked out of there and told the AD he's not starting his son. That is courage. That is guts. And I don't need to tell you that from that point on, those guys would all take a bullet for Era. And Era left as the winningest coach in Northwestern history when he left there a few years later to coach Notre Dame. Strong lesson in that as well. Third lesson is Woody Hayes. Simply, nobody outworked Woody Hayes. And Bo coached for Woody. He loved it. A lot of arguments, a lot of screaming. And Woody also surrounded himself with very strong characters, strong coaches, strong personalities, guys who did well coaching elsewhere. And the lesson there is, don't hire yes men. Hire guys who will give you their honest opinion. That said, as Dwight would say, when you leave the room, I am still the head coach. And with Woody, of course, there was no confusing that. Woody also stressed execution over innovation, as Bo did. As Bo said about his neighborhood drugstore, a big chain, we all know it, I will not name it. He said, forget your computer system, forget all that. When I show up there, make sure the aisles are clean. Make sure the product I want is there, and make sure I get a hello when I show up, and a thank you and a goodbye when I leave. Do those things first, and then I'll get to your computers. Screw up those things, I'll never meet your computers, because I'm not doing business here. And he said, it's still, as Woody would say, blocking and tackling, and blocking and tackling. Those two things, we all have it. For us, it's probably email and phone messages. You have to return these things every day or you're behind the eight ball. We all know this now.
Chapter 3, John Bacon, take charge, throw a bucket of cold water.
Oh, yeah. Bo shows up, January 69. Now, Timothy Leary has been on campus burning draft cards at the 50 of the football stadium. Jesse Jackson has been there trying to persuade the black players to strike. The black action movement has taken over the president's house, president's office for a few days. And Bo is from Oxford, Ohio, and rather stunned by this culture clash. Shows up with this neat military haircut. The guys are there with their long hair, the fros, the goatees, the lamb chops, the Van Dykes. And he says to them, from now on, you're all going to be clean shaven. could have heard a pin drop. And part of the story is in Mitch Albom's book. It's very hard to avoid Mitch Albom's book. Three or four cases I had to cover some similar terrain, but with different lessons involved. One guy, Jim Betts, shows up. God bless him, a great friend of mine, great friend of Bo's. He's got a mustache. He's been trying his whole life to grow this mustache. He's a sophomore on the team with a lot of guts. He says, Bo, you have to understand it's part of a black man's heritage to maintain our mustaches. And Bo says, what a crock. He says, no, really, I'm being serious. He knows, Bo knows three black guys in his whole life. He's from Barberton, Ohio and Oxford, Ohio. He's not met too many black guys in his life. So he hangs it out there. Bo says, get out of my office. Later on that day, team meeting after the practice, and he says, it's come to my attention that it's part of a black man's heritage to maintain facial hair. So from now on, you're allowed to keep your mustaches. As for you white guys, you have no heritage. Shave them off. That was his one concession to the 60s. That was it. But he was a hardcore guy from the get-go.
We're talking to John Bacon. When we come back, we'll ask him to share a couple of great stories on Bo. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with John Bacon, who co-authored with Bo, Bo's Lasting Lessons. John, a couple of great Bo stories, if you would.
One of your favorite I know, of course, being a proud ND supporter, Notre Dame that is the Rocket Ishmael story, where Bo had a five-point plan to beat Notre Dame his last time he played him in 1989. And one of the point five was avoid Rocket Ishmael at all costs. And his boys hand over his papers to me. He says, avoid Rocket at all costs. Good idea. I wish we had done that. So, of course, they kick the ball to him once, and Rocket returns the ball all the way against Michigan. First time in Bo's 21 years at Michigan that anybody returned a kickoff for a touchdown. An anomaly. So the second time, Bo says, let's kick it away from the guy, squib it, do whatever you need to do, but avoid Rocket. And his coaches say, no, we got to kick it to Rocket. Otherwise, we're showing we're weak. Got to show confidence in our guys. And Bo says, are you sure about this? And they say, yes, we are. Kick it to Rocket. He runs it all the way back for a touchdown once again. So there you are, 2-for-2, and they lose the game by a few points. Clearly, Rocket's two touchdowns made all the difference. At the press conference afterwards, they ask him, whose smart idea was it to kick to Rocket Ishmael two times? And Bo could have said it's my coach's, and it kind of was. But Bo's rule is, I want to hear from you. But if I disagree, we're supporting my decision without complaint. He said, that being the case, I could have overruled them and said, we're not doing this, and that's that. So he got up in front of the press and said, whose idea was it? It was my idea. Any more questions? And that was the end of that. And of course, his coaches loved him for that because he said, look, if I can overturn the decision and they'll have to support me, then that was clearly my decision ultimately to agree to do what we did. And I could have overruled him. So that was their mistake. That was his mistake. And that was Rocket in 89. His only loss that year until USC in the Rose Bowl.
Second story, if you would.
Quick one is when I screwed up some fact. I got 1960 instead of 1961. And Bo turns to me and says, you know, Bacon, there are times I think you're not as stupid as I did when I first met you. But then you say some stupid comment like that. Then I think, no, I was right the first time. Which only goes to show you, you have to trust your instincts. And right there, at first I'm cowering, then I'm kind of grinning a little bit. He goes, Bacon, what the heck are you smiling about? I am chewing your butt out. And I said, Coach, you have to understand, I'm a 5'8" guy from Ann Arbor. I can't run. I can't jump. I can't block a lineman. I probably can't block a punt. But as of this day, I'm part of that exclusive fraternity of all those great All-Americans who are chewed out by the legendary Glenn E. Bo Schembechler. I'm in the club. And Bo looks away and says, they broke the mold when they made you, Bacon. They broke the mold. And that was not a compliment.
John Bacon. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to John Bacon, and we're talking to him about the legendary Coach Bo Schembechler. The fourth main point in the book, John, is do the right thing always. Please.
Jack, I've known you for 10 years now. We met, for the listeners, when I was doing a story on you for Sports Illustrated. We've become good friends since then. Now we've done a few projects together, a few trips together. All around good guy. And I know that's exactly up your alley. And I know that you know. That sounds really simple. And as Bill often said to me, it's simple, but it must not be easy, because clearly not everyone does it. And you see Congress, and you see Wall Street, and you see Enron and all the rest, and it's not often followed. His dad famously, this is also in the album book, and I covered briefly in my book, in the early 30s, I'm sorry, mid-30s or so, he was given the answers for the civil service exam in Barberton, Ohio, to become the fire chief. And he wanted this job very badly. And he asked his friends, what is this? They said, it's the answers. The other guy's already got them. He says, why are you giving it to me? He said, it's not fair. If you don't have them, then he's going to get the job. And he slid the envelope back across the table and said, I cannot do this. And later on that night, his friends called him, urging him to do it, because otherwise the other guy, whom they did not like, is going to be their fire chief. And he said again, I cannot do this, and you know I cannot do this because you know me. And he hung up the phone and he started crying. And Bo told me it's the only time he'd ever seen his dad cry. Tough guy also. Bo took that lesson with him the rest of his life. And at one point I asked him at the end of that story, I said, okay, you got a week till I see you again. I want you to think of some situation like your dad's, some moral dilemma you had here at Michigan where you had to think about it and it kind of broke your heart to make your decision and what you did. He said, okay. Actually, what he said is, you see, Bacon, that's your problem. You always have one more doggone question. So that's Bo. So I come back a week later, and he said, Bacon, I actually thought about your question this time, and here's the honest truth, he said, is that I cannot think of one single time in my 21 years at Michigan that I had a moral dilemma like my dad's, and here's why. We always knew what the right thing to do was, so we did it, and we slept well at night. End of story. We knew what the right thing to do was, so we did it, and we slept well at night. If you want integrity in a nutshell, there it is. The key is you have to be willing to sacrifice some great players and recruiting for that, some occasional games you're going to lose to teams that are cheating with steroids or recruiting or money or whatever else. You have to be willing to sacrifice things you want, to be honest, and Bo is willing to do that. But man, that's the whole thing in a nutshell.
The fifth main point in the book, John, build your team, recruit for character.
I love that one. It's one of my favorites, and it's got some great stories in there about Jamie Morris and Dan Dierdorf. The first thing about building your team is you try to get them kind of all to the middle. The All-Americans, you're tougher on than you are on the walk-ons. Dan Dierdorf, of course, reached out his hand when he met Bo, and Bo said, you're fat, you're mine, and I never forget. And he also said, you're All-American, you're the best tackle right now in football, including the NFL, which is why you won't be able to do a thing right for the first month because everyone's watching to see how I treat you. Do I let you cut corners? Am I nicer to you and all the rest? And the answer is I'm going to be tougher on you than everyone else. You make your All-Americans team players. Your walk-ons, you treat like kings so long as they're doing all the work right, including getting training table. The one NCAA rule that Bo broke was that one. The NCAA does not allow you to have training table for those non-scholarship players. And Bo said, that's bull. I'm not going to put you through 40 minutes of all kinds of heck and, you know, 2 hours in his case. Everything everyone else is doing, I'm putting you through. And then I'm going to tell you at the end of the day that we're going to eat over here, and you go get your own meal. That's not how a team works. So he would find the meals for those guys and let them eat with the team. So everyone's on the same page. Everyone's got their name in the back of their jersey. Everyone's in the program. Everyone is treated the same. So you bring the top down and the bottom up, and now you've got a team.
Next main point, listen before you lead.
That one's wonderful and unexpected. For all the yelling and shouting Bo did, that's not how you win 13 Big Ten titles in 21 years. As he told me, you cannot yell and scream your way to 13 Big Ten titles. And he also said, if there's a mutiny on this team, there's 125 of those guys, and there's one of me. They're going to win by lunch. It's not even close. They could quit, they could transfer, they can do whatever, and they all stayed. The question is why. Jimmy Hackett shows up. Here's how Bo's rules went. From 10 to 12, Monday through Friday when he's coaching, that's a staff meeting. That is sacred. The door is locked and no one comes in. The secretaries know to hold all calls. If the U of M president calls, Lynn Cook takes a message. If the president of the United States calls, and I'm not kidding you, he's close to Gerald Ford, pretty close to George H.W. Bush, campaigned for both, of course, you take a message. But if a third-string walk-on from Solon, Ohio, comes down with his guts in a knot, you're not to ask him why he's there because he will not tell you if it's personal. You don't ask him to come back tomorrow. If it's personal, he's not going to come back again, and you missed your one chance to help that guy out. You pull me out of that meeting immediately, and I'll give that guy all the time he wants. And he talked to Jimmy Hackett like this. Jimmy Hackett's a third-string player. Should he quit? Is he adding anything to the team? You know, why doesn't he transfer and play at Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, whatever else? And according to Jimmy, not Bo, the whole time Bo's listening to Jimmy Hackett at this meeting, pulls him outside. He does not once look at his watch. He does not once look out the window. He does not once look back at the meeting that's going on without him. The whole time, it's eye contact like this and not rushed. And when Jimmy's done spilling his guts, Bo waits about 5 seconds before he says anything. And then he says, Jimmy, first of all, I want you to know, I know exactly how you feel because I've been in your shoes. When I was at Miami, there were 24 guys in my dorm who made the train trip to Virginia and one guy who didn't, and his name was Shem Beckler. And I was so humiliated by this fact that whole weekend, I didn't go to the library because people were going to see me. I didn't go to the cafeteria because they would know that I had not made the trip. I went without food for 2 straight days to avoid being seen. I know how it feels. And let me tell you something else, Jimmy. I know you've not missed a practice in 2.5 years. I know how hard you work, and everyone else knows it too. And another thing is, you're the guy who's made the guy you're going against an all-Big Ten nose guard because he sees you in practice more every day. And he sees the rest of the Big Ten combined. You've made him an all-Big Ten nose guard. Without you, he doesn't get there. I can't tell you what to do, but that's what you mean to this team. And Jimmy Hackett was on cloud nine. He didn't blow any smoke, no false promises, didn't say I was faster or smarter than I was. He said, what I'm doing right now matters. Who I am right now matters. And Bo learned that from listening. And that's the softer side of Bo that people don't realize. You don't yell and scream your way to 13 Big Ten titles.
At the back of the book, John, you have some reflections from people. Here's what Lloyd Carr told you about him. Of all Bo's qualities, his tremendous willpower is the quality that I admired the most. He had an incredible will to win, to live and to make a difference. As Rudyard Kipling said, if you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch. That was Bo's magic. He never lost the common touch. John Bacon, you spent 400 hours with this legendary man in the last year and a half of his life. What's the single biggest thing Bo taught you, John Bacon?
This is going to sound corny, and Bo might kill me for saying it. But when you listen to the stories about listening, when you hear the stories about the players he's coached who got cancer, the Tom Slades, the Bobby Baumgartners, and how Bo would fly out to San Francisco to spend a day with Bobby Baumgartner, how when Tom Slade was going through this horrible procedure, he woke up, and this is from Tom Slade I heard before he passed away. He told me he woke up at one point, he looks across the bed, and there in a chair against the wall is Bo Schembechler, his old coach, looking at him, at a third-string quarterback from 35 years earlier. And Slade said his eyes flutter back down, and 5 hours later, his eyes flutter back open, he looks across the room, across the bed, and there in a chair against the wall is Bo Schembechler, his old coach, looking right back at him. Again, no words are spoken. Tom nods. Bo nods, and that's it. But as Tom told me, how many coaches? Find me another one. 35 years later, is there in that chair for 5 hours for a third-string quarterback from 1973. And I'm going to tell you this, and it's going to sound corny, but I swear without it, nothing else works. It's love. And Bo, as Tom Izzo said, discipline is love, and Bo's players were very well loved by that standard. He loved his players. And without that, it would not have worked, and they, on some deep level, they knew this, which is why they came back.
If you ever asked him, Bo, what's love, what would he say?
He would say, there you go again. He goes, wow, what's love? I cared about the guys. I'll tell you that. I cared about the guys, and they should have known it. He'll say that much. But trust me, he had a big heart, a damaged heart, but a big heart. And there's just no mistaking it, and people know. People can tell.
We're talking to John Bacon, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with John Bacon, the co-author with Bo of Bo's Lasting Lessons. John, being around this great man for hundreds of hours, how has it changed your life?
You know, it's kind of funny. I did not realize how many hours it was until you and I sat down before the show and did some calculations. And again, not on Mitch Albom's territory by any means. We did meet every Tuesday, occasionally Thursdays. His book sold a little more than mine, about 44 million more, I believe. But I was amazed to discover that many hours we spent during that time. How did it change me? It did change me. You cannot be a reporter on the sidelines being around Bo that much. And I'm sure Mitch Albom would agree with that. You get pulled in along the way. And the things that changed me when I was around Bo, it confirms things I already felt about passion, honesty, and so on. But the softer sides are the sides that really took away with me. One of them was don't hold grudges. It amazed me how almost zen-like, and he'd kill me for that too, Bo was in not holding grudges. He had a horrible temper, and he blew up all the time. But when he blew up, he was done. Now it's your problem. As Bo said, they always say, you've got a problem, you got to sleep on it. But that's bull. If it's a real problem, you can't sleep anyway. I say, let the other guy sleep on his problem. So it's off his chest, but, and that's not a bad way to live either. That way you get it right from Bo. But not holding grudges, I realized, you know what? I've been holding grudges, some, you know, close friends, some workers or whatever else, for years. And you and I were talking about this, and you had a great line, and I want you to deliver it if you can.
Having bitterness is like me taking poison in the hope that you die.
I love that, and that's exactly it. And Bo, to a shocking degree, did not hold grudges. That's why his bad heart for 37 years lasted as long as it did. He did not hold stress inside. And when I started letting go of some grudges one by one, I realized what a weight it was off me and how it wasn't doing me a doggone bit of good anyway. And as you point out, they don't even know it. They don't care. They're fine. All right, so I ought to be fine too. So my big lesson I learned from Bo is don't hold grudges. Again, easier said than done, but what a relief. And that was Bo's gift to me.
One of the chapters in the book is entitled, If I Could Have One More Week. Share that chapter, John.
This is my favorite, and we came upon it kind of by accident. The folks at Warner did a great job editing the book, and Rick Wolf deserves all kudos, a Harvard grad and all this good stuff. But one of the few disagreements we had is, I said, this has to be a chapter. As you see here, it's barely a page. It's a page and a chunk. I said, it has to be its own chapter. When you read it, you know why. I asked Bo in September of 05, if he had one more week at the height of his powers, what would he ask for? And this question popped in my head out of nowhere. I don't know why, it just did. And he thought about it, and then he said, give me one more week in preparation for the Buckeyes of Ohio State and make it against that great general across the sideline, Wayne Woodrow Hayes. And he goes through with great love and affection what that whole week meant to him, from Sunday films to Friday night tucking the players in, which he actually did. And he'd hand him a hot mug of hot chocolate and a warm chocolate chip cookie, just like your mama made you. And the whiplash from being so mean on Monday and so nice on Friday night was so much for some guys that one friend of mine, he'd been riding all week long, he hands this friend of mine, Bill, this hot chocolate and the warm chocolate chip cookie, and Bill says, you try it first. And Bo, to his credit, told that story himself. And then he said, if my team was really ready, the game would be icing. Because if you're a leader, a real leader, the preparation is the thing. That's what you're paid for. Whether you're a parent, a teacher, a coach, a supervisor, whatever, your job is to get your people ready. And if they're ready, and I mean really ready, then after that, it's up to them. And if they succeed, give them the credit, not yourself. That's their success, not your success. And that was very selfless, I thought, of Bo. And Bo said to me, if my team was ready, and I mean Michigan ready, I could go back to my room, sit on the corner of the bed, and just go, ah, and I'd be satisfied. And at that point, I was getting choked up. 14 months later, that's exactly how Bo passes away. Giving the pregame speech to the team on Thursday night, and the next morning, the morning before the Ohio State game, with his team ready, and I mean Michigan ready, that's when he passed away, and I do believe he was satisfied that he'd led a full life.
Bo and Woody, synonymous as a team. When Woody hit the Clemson player in 1978 on the sidelines, what did Bo do?
This is amazing. This is Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. Best friends till Bo takes the job, and then worst enemies for 10 years. And they only talk to each other twice a year during that whole stretch. Once at the Big Ten meeting, and once at halftime before and after the game. That's it. Except for when Bo has a heart attack, Woody visits Bo. That's the first year. The last year, Woody needs Bo. He's in the dumps after punching the player. The Ohio State doctor calls Bo. Not the assistant coaches, not his former players. He calls his arch rival, his nemesis, Luke Skywalker, and says, Woody's in trouble, and Bo, you got to talk to him. They meet at Doit Perry's house in Bowling Green, Ohio, neutral territory more or less. And they talk for a couple hours, both wearing shirts and ties out of respect. And Bo is trying to convince Woody to apologize and save his job. Now think about this. This guy's the greatest thorn in your side. This guy you want to beat more than anyone else all year long, and you're begging him to save his job, to keep it going. And Woody didn't quite do it. All he said was, in his public speeches, Bo thinks I ought to apologize, but Bo's not always right. That's as close as he got to an apology, and I do believe if he took Bo's advice, he would have kept coaching for a while more. But that shows you how complicated that relationship was.
John Bacon, you've heard thousands of stories since Bo passed and since the book has been published. What's the greatest story you've heard?
I'd have a hard time picking one, but I have heard thousands. I've not heard a bad one yet. The best ones are when someone, a complete quote-unquote nobody, but not to Bo. A guy I'd met 2 days earlier, a Notre Dame fan in this case, Bo is chasing down the airport. Hey, you! And the guy looks around at his Bo, goes, I met you a couple nights ago. Like, the guy didn't forget it, of course. And he pulls him in, they have a cup of coffee at Metro Airport and just shoot the breeze. Another kid he met when he was 10, he starts keeping track of and helps get into Michigan, a handicapped kid at age 18. These stories behind the scenes. As my mom said, your character is what you do when you think no one's watching. And I've seen Bo pass that test 1,000 times.
John, I think we'd be remiss. You know, Bo had 21 phenomenal seasons at U of M. We've just watched his protege, Lloyd Carr, pass from the scene after 13 years. Talk a little bit about Lloyd Carr.
Bo and Lloyd were very close. Bo hired him, of course, at Michigan, groomed him, and certainly approved of him being named the interim coach for a while and then head coach. And I'm sure Bo had a strong influence in that. Bo loved Lloyd and Lloyd loved Bo. And I think that was hard for Lloyd after Bo passed away not to be able to talk to Bo on a weekly basis in his office. As Bo told me, it's a one-way street, that I will never go to his office to talk to him. If he wants to talk to me, he certainly can. It's got to be said, when Lloyd won that Capital One Bowl, he's the first Michigan coach in 60 years to the day who left on a winning note. Not Bo, not Bump, not Benny Oosterbaan, not Mo. Not since January 1st, 1948, did a Michigan coach get carried off on his player's shoulders, and Lloyd got that treat, and Bo would have loved it.
You saw the soft side of Bo many, many times. Talk about his soft side.
People wouldn't guess that. He loved to sing. It's hard to imagine Bo being a singer. He'd come in down the hallway singing with you, I've gone from rags to riches, I feel like a millionaire. And the secretaries all knew if Bo's singing, he's in a good mood, life is good. He loved to sing, he loved answering the phone, he loved talking to almost anybody, and he loved talking about you and not about him. He hated the whole Bo, you're great stuff. But, and you've met him a few times, whenever he starts talking to you, he asks you what you do. If you're a Walmart greeter, really, what's that like? How's Walmart doing? You must have some stories. Tell me those things. And right away, the guy goes from being nervous to being calm, cool, and collected, and now you're equals sharing stories. And that's what Bo loved the most.
The few times I met him, I don't know how many times he told me, got it? Got it?
You got, and with a finger in your chest, too, probably too. Cursula, are you listening to me? Are you listening? How could you not be? He's so loud. He was good at underscoring his points.
If Bo was here tonight, what advice would he give to our young listeners?
It'd be pretty simple. One, do what you love, otherwise it's not worth doing. Two, do it with your whole heart and your whole character. No cutting corners. Next thing is, take care of your people. All right, you're remembered for that. And last thing is, when it's time to step down, don't worry about the numbers or your fame or anything else. If you went into it for the right reasons, you'll be beloved and you'll have a ton of friends. Don't worry about it. Walk away with no regrets. And Bo did.
John Bacon, it's an honor to have you. Everywhere I go, people are talking about this book. And its greatest days are ahead. Its greatest days are ahead.
You're kind. The whole goal is to make sure that Bo's words lived on, and I hope that's the case.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.